This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. 4,000 progressive activists gathered last weekend in Chicago, Illinois, for the People's Summit, an impressive annual conference organized by the National Nurses United. In only its second year, the conference has grown dramatically, underscoring the resurgence from the left in large part as a response to last year's candidacy of Senator Bernie Sanders and then Donald Trump's win in November. At this year's People's Summit, famed author and journalist Thomas Frank made an appearance, and I had the chance to sit with him to discuss the current political moment we are in. Thomas Frank is a historian, journalist, and columnist for Harper's Magazine. He's best known for his 2005 New York Times bestseller, What's the Matter with Kansas? He's also written several other books, including Pity the Billionaire and his latest, Listen Liberal, Whatever Happened to the Party of the People.
I'm sitting here with Thomas Frank at the People's Summit in Chicago. He's just been signing books, copies of his latest book, Listen Liberal. Welcome to the program, Thomas.
It's great to be here.
So your ideas have become resurgent since the last election because so many people have been trying to understand what happened. And one of my questions, whenever I think of this question, I think of you, which is the concept of the idea of the liberal elite. Is it a mythical creature, the liberal elite, or is this something quite real, even though it's something that's put forward by the right wing?
Well, so the way the right uses the phrase, it's a myth, okay? Because they never define it. It's a hate term, right? The way they use it, it doesn't mean anything. But yes, there is a liberal elite, or as the way I put it in Listen Liberal, there's a liberal class. There's a certain kind of very affluent white-collar professional that the Democratic Party regards as their base, their core constituency, their most important group of constituents. And those people, I mean, they are an elite. They're not the elite of our society, but they're one of the elites. And that's very important to understand when you want to try to say fathom why Trump is able to succeed or why conservatism keeps winning over big chunks of the working class in this country. Well, that's one of the, it's really important to understand that. It is true.
So in that phrase, liberal elite, you might often see the word Hollywood tacked on before that, the Hollywood liberal elites. And by that, I take to mean those people who make movies that might put forward liberal ideas and ideals. Why is that so threatening to the right?
Americans have a love-hate thing with Hollywood, okay? And with TV and with advertising and with, you know, all of our mass culture. In one sense, obviously, we like to go to movies. In another sense, we don't particularly like celebrities. Okay, so you got to remember something about America. You know this, of course. It is a profoundly democratic country, and I mean that in a cultural sense. That people are they hate the effort of any group to raise itself up above, you know, the common lot of humanity. And there is something about celebrity and celebrities that rubs people the wrong way. And there's also something, look, there's something about the professional class. One of the things that I pointed out in Listen Liberal is that, you know, becoming the party of the professional class, which is what the Democrats are. I mean, there's all these other groups in the Democratic Party, but the other groups don't really matter. The professionals are the ones that come first. The lawyers, the doctors, that sort of thing. People with advanced degrees, affluent, white collar, well-to-do people, they come first. Being a party of those people is problematic because those people are privileged by law. You know, you can't just walk into a courtroom and practice law. These are society's officer corps, if you will. And to make yourself a party of that is you're going to offend a lot of people almost automatically.
So we are gathering in Chicago today, which is not only the home of, for example, a center of the Fight for 15 movement, it is the birthplace, some would argue, of neoliberal economics.
Oh, yes.
Progressives talk about neoliberal economic neoliberal economics and policies. And I'm wondering if a better understanding of what neoliberal economics are can be the thing that can help bridge the divide between progressives and even some who consider themselves conservatives who are struggling today because neoliberal economic policies aren't often named as such on CNN, for example, or Fox News.
No, that's that. You're exactly right about that. But I'm here to tell you that won't make any difference at all, because the reason neoliberalism, people go to that just because it tells them what they want to hear. It's not because it's like scientifically true. You know, it's all. You know this, right? I don't know if you're familiar with professional economics.
But it's sort of fantasy almost.
Yes, it is fantasy. Well, routine, but basically professional economics is a perfect example of what is wrong with professions generally. It's a bunch of people who've got together in order to limit conversation about economics to them and their friends, and to keep everybody else out, and to define everybody else as being outside of the conversation. And this is a terrible thing. And it's ridiculous. It's a cartel, you know. It's the opposite of free trade, which they worship, a profession.
Yet so many people on the right, who are the people who might most benefit most from progressive policies, of course, have bought into the Kool-Aid. And that is, I know, the heart of so many of the political analyses you've worked on for much of your career. So in the age of Trump, when we dismiss anything that we disagree with as fake news, because the president does so, how does one combat with facts and reality the fake news and some of these myths, some of this Kool-Aid that people have bought?
Well, look, it is tough. And of course, it's, you know, Trump is a product. He's not a cause. Trump is a product of this world that we're living in. And the cause is something much closer to something like Fox News, which it's a fun ideology. You got to remember something about Fox News. It's pleasurable to imagine that yourself, that you are both a person, you're affluent, you're privileged, and you're also the victim. You're the victim of everything, and you complain bitterly, and you know, and you cry hot tears about your own victimization. People love that. It's there's something very comforting about that. So
Trump thanked Fox and Friends on his Twitter feed after the Comey hearing for basically being the only outlet that covered it properly, right?
Yeah, right. So how do you break through that? Well, it's tough, of course. I mean, we're in this age of mass media. Television has more power than ever before. And you know, these guys are very good at the game, the right wing. They're very, very good at the game. And you know, I'm 52 years old in my lifetime. There's been, I don't know how many efforts to start a liberal, like, radio network. And they all crash and burn. Or you look at something like MSNBC, which really, you know, it does not achieve what a lot of people hoped it would.
Is that, you think, because it's too beholden to the Democratic Party?
That's a huge part of it. Which is a strange thing. When I was in college, we learned that the parties were no longer important. You know, and when you studied political science, that was one of the things that they taught you. And now, people love to. It's like, you know, this is a deeply democratic country, but there's something fun about towing the party line. It's not like the old Soviet Union or something, right? There's no Big Brother forcing us all to say what the party's vision of reality, but people do it anyway.
So it's like being part of a club, it's comforting?
Yeah, something like that. And, you know, that has an upside, of course. I'm sure that helps to get out the vote on election day, but it has this incredibly awful downside in that you can't speak to people. You can't persuade people. You can't reason with people. I think at the end of the day, people are very, very hungry for something like what Bernie Sanders was offering in the last go-round. And they are ready to hear that message. And it's just the problem is getting a megaphone.
And they're not going to hear that from either of the major parties. That's a big part of the problem.
Well, yeah, of course. That is a huge... Look, the Republicans are lost. You're not going to win the Republicans over. Although Trump, man, he took a sledgehammer to that party in the primaries. That was kind of fun to watch. But that has to now happen to the Democrats. What Trump did to the Republicans now has to happen to the Democratic Party.
Hasn't it already, to an extent, with Clinton's loss, with Clinton losing to the worst possible candidate in modern history?
Oh, yeah. Wait, there's an example from just the other day. Jim Messina was advising Theresa May in England, the Tory. Jim Messina, one of the you know, prominent Democrats from the...
identifying with the Conservative Party in Britain.
That's right. And losing. Screwing it up. You know, I love that. These guys screw up and screw up and screw up, and there's never any consequences for them. But no, that we have to, you know, this is a contradiction that has to be resolved. The Democratic Party can't go on the way it's been going. By the way, they think they can. They think Trump is such a, you know, such an awful president. There'll be this huge backlash against him like there was against Nixon. And so they don't have to do anything differently. They're just going to slide back into office in a couple of years. That may be true, but it's not a long-term solution.
And that's exactly how Hillary Clinton ran her campaign. Oh, yeah. Trump was such an awful candidate that she would win, but she didn't.
Exactly, and she offered nothing to, you know, to these voters. I mean, nothing.
So I understand you just covered the elections in Britain. What can we learn from what Jeremy Corbyn did in the UK to here in the United States with the Democratic Party, not just in the message that he delivered, but even in the way some of their rules for their elections are different from ours, right?
Yeah, but here's the critical thing about Jeremy Corbyn. So I didn't really know much about him when I went over. I mean, I read a lot of articles and everything, and I got up to speed on him. Every pundit in the world said this man was a loser. His own party thought that he was going to be a terrible loser. Theresa May calls a snap election in order to take advantage of the fact that he's the Labour Party leader, because she thinks she can, you know, easily run up a gigantic majority against his party. And look, it turns out he's not so bad. He's actually pretty good at this game. You know, he's out there on the stump. He actually came across pretty well. They put out their party platform, the Labour Party platform. People are reading it. They're like, hey, that actually sounds pretty good. You know, I'd go for that. You know, free higher education, that's a good idea. Spend more money on healthcare? Hey, yeah, why not? And I just want to remind you, all of these things, whether you're talking about Trump or whether you're talking about Jeremy Corbyn or whether you're talking about Bernie or whether you're talking about, you know, all these different things that have been happening, these are all ripples from the same cause. And that causes inequality, and the cause is the coming apart of the middle class world. And this is happening all over the West. And this is not going to stop anytime soon. What Corbyn reminds us is the same thing that Trump reminded us of, and the same thing that Bernie Sanders reminded us of. Anything is possible. All these people were treated with contempt by the pundits. You remember the Washington Post, the way they treated Bernie Sanders. Or the way they still, you know, the way they treated Donald Trump. I mean, no pundit thought Trump was going to win. Not one. This is it. We are in a new world here.
So here's the thing that, of course, always gets under the skin of progressives, which is that the problems of neoliberal economics, the problems of inequality and capitalism are felt by all. And the solutions that progressives put forth are equality for all. You know, those very same solutions, the most direct solutions to those problems, whereas all the opposition has to offer are the indirect solutions like trickle-down economics, which we know don't work. And yet, time after time after time, except in the UK to an extent, we lose. In Syriza, the Syriza party in Greece won and then lost. And in many other places, progressives have come close and lost, come close and lost. And it's disappointing and hope, you know, sort of it seems to engender a lot of pessimism. Why are...
I have one word response to that. FDR. He was elected four times. And then his vice president was elected a fifth to Harry Truman. And it rolled on and on and on for decades. And would still be going had the Democratic Party not decided to change course. I mean, you take a guy like Lyndon Johnson and put him in today's situation. Will you make him president in 2008? Oh, by the way, Barack Obama, I thought he was going to be Franklin Roosevelt for our time, you know. And but you take one of those old school Dems, they would have known exactly what to do. He'd be president still. Obama would be had he played that situation right in 2008. And by the way, had he done what was popular, what was helpful, everything was pushing him to do the right thing, and he resisted.
So then the enemies of progressivism is liberalism?
I don't know about that, because I would describe myself as a liberal. You know, I like that word. I would say the main stumbling block now is the Democratic Party machinery, and that's what this gathering is all about. We're going to change that. It has to. It has to change.
Something,
well, it it can't just go on and on and on like this. I mean, Trump has already shown us the danger. I mean, this is the biggest demagogue we've ever seen in this country. Thank God he's totally incompetent. You know, what if that was a real politician? What if that really was a Huey Long? You know, it could happen, and it will happen unless we get off our butts and the Democratic Party, you know, starts playing the game again, you know.
They won't unless we force them to?
Unless we force them to. Right. They're very comfortable. Remember that. The leadership of the Democratic Party, they don't see anything wrong. You know, they don't have to change anything.
And finally, how much of the soul searching from why Hillary lost, how much of that has happened in your estimation or not happened? Because it feels like that's now going to be what will determine whether the Democratic Party moves forward or continues as with business as usual.
Well, I'm in an extremely good position to answer that question because I wrote a book last year, which you mentioned earlier, about what's wrong with the Democratic Party, in which I described all of their failings in great detail. And I'm here to tell you that if the Democratic Party had postmortems, I was never invited to a single one, so...
So Hillary Clinton,
if they did have them, I don't know about it. You know, I would say that if they had postmortems,
they need to read your book.
Well, that would be a good starting point. I mean, you could go on about this stuff for a very long time, and you could, you know, figure out what went wrong in all sorts of ways. But no, I don't think they're interested in that. That my recipe, what I describe, would be good for America, and it would be good for the individual politicians and stuff like that. But it wouldn't be good for the people who currently run the Democratic Party, the sort of dominant faction in the Democratic Party today. No, it would not be good for them.
So they need to be pushed out.
Yeah.
Thomas.
Hey, look, that's politics. That happens. I'm sorry, you know? Yeah, it needs to happen.
Thomas Frank, thank you so much for spending this time with me.
You got it.
My guest has been Thomas Frank, speaking with me at the People's Summit in Chicago, Illinois, last weekend. He is a historian, journalist, and columnist for Harper's Magazine. He has written such books as the New York Times bestseller, What's the Matter with Kansas? And his latest is called Listen Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People? I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, and after this show, we will continue our coverage of the People's Summit for the rest of the week. You can find out more about our program at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.